And as far as the history of Negro Americans is concerned, this does not involve nearly as much of an effort as some would believe. To be sure, we do need to do more research and write many more works on the history of Negro Americans, as indeed we do in many other fields in American history. Any graduate professor is happy that it hasn't all been done yet. But there are already hundreds and hundreds of first-rate historical works dealing with the history of Negro Americans that would occupy the attention of teachers and others for years to come, and that would greatly illuminate their understanding of the history not only of Negro Americans, but of the United States as a whole. The book called The Tragic Era, written by Claude Bowers in 1929, castigates, misrepresents, and blasphemes the role that Negro Americans played during Reconstruction. But that book has sold several hundred thousand copies since it was published in 1929. More than any other work in this century, it is responsible for the twisted, distorted, an uninformed view of the Reconstruction era that prevails in 1969. On the other hand, Black Reconstruction, written by W.E.B. Du Bois, and that successfully refuted much that Bowers wrote and revised our understanding of Reconstruction, Du Bois's book went out of print shortly after its first modest printing in 1935 and did not appear again because of the lack of demand for it until 1964. When Horace Mann Bond's seminal book on Negro education in Alabama was published in 1938, and which gave us the best view we have of Alabama Reconstruction, it was ignored by historians and laymen alike, and it remained out of print for almost 30 years. Many other historical works of Negro Americans that have not gone out of print have remained on the shelves, dusty, unread, ignored, and this country is all the poorer for its narrow view of what constitutes its own history. We are now in the midst of a great renaissance regarding the history of Negro Americans. Workshops, seminars, in-service courses, institutes, and a dozen other arrangements herald a new day in the study of the history of Negro Americans. Colleges and universities are establishing divisions and departments and majors in what is now called Black Studies. Publishers are literally pouring out handbooks, anthologies, workbooks, almanacs, documentaries, and textbooks on the history of Negro Americans. Seldom has there been so much activity in a field so recently ignored and bypassed. Soon we shall have many more books than we can read. Indeed, we shall have many more than we should read. Soon we shall have many more authorities on Negro history than we can listen to, and indeed, many more than we should listen to. There's something both amusing and tragic about the way in which the great and not so great colleges and universities are reacting to the Black Revolution. It is reminiscent of the scramble to catch up with the Russians after they sent up their first Sputnik in 1959. Perhaps the older ones of you can recall the panic and the desperation that characterized the approaches and the actions of officials both in Washington and in higher education to that momentous event. Enormous sums of money were expended to accelerate our space program, to set up language and area study programs, and to identify and encourage those who could benefit from such efforts. Soon, resources were distributed to in any and all directions, and it became possible for one to enjoy a National Defense Fellowship, not only to study astrophysics and the Russian language, but also to study the American frontier, as well as juvenile delinquency and family disorganization. We have gone full circle now. Next year, at the University of Chicago, we expect to have a student specializing in the history of Negro Americans who will be on a national defense grant. There must be some hidden significance in this development. Left to its own devices, American higher education moves slowly, if at all, to adjust to the changes that take place all around it. And we see that after Sputnik, American higher education would never be the same. Today, our colleges and our universities are engaged in a far-reaching revision of their curriculum to assimilate and accommodate black studies. They are also engaged in a widespread talent search, not only for black students, but also for black professors. Some are even defying the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and setting up separate living and separate eating facilities for black students. Some of them have gone so far as to provide soul food for black students, apparently not realizing in their effort to achieve peace in our time that fried chicken and turnip greens and cornbread are as important a part of the cuisine of Southern whites as it is of Southern blacks. It is clear that the most vigorous effort to revise the curriculum is in the field of history. Literally hundreds of colleges and universities have in the past 2 years introduced courses on the history of black Americans. Within the next year or two, several hundred more will add such courses. In this, as in other responses to the Black Revolution, many institutions are acting with a speed that can hardly be described as deliberate. Overnight, they have established courses and placed them in the hands of persons whose greatest talent seems to be in wringing their hands and desperately trying to find out something about the history of Negro Americans before the beginning of the next meeting of the class. Ignorance abounds not only among would-be white teachers of black history, but also among would-be black teachers of black history. My files are replete with calls for assistance. White teachers write with an air of desperation and helplessness and plead for assistance in the plans that their colleges have made to begin a course in black history immediately. Black teachers write with an air of triumph, saying that they have forced the college to teach a course in black history, and that they would appreciate it if I would send them by return mail a course syllabus, a bibliography, and a suggestion for a textbook. The tragic fact is that there are not sufficient competent teachers to meet the demands. Some institutions are without guilt, for they have not been engaged in the training of historians of any description. Our distinguished universities, however, that have been the centers of for the training of historians, including Negro historians, such institutions must share the responsibility for the present state of affairs. Until quite recently, they have not encouraged whites to study and write about the history of Negro Americans. And although they have trained virtually all of the Negro historians, they have never encouraged any of them to join their own enterprise of teaching and research. Instead, they seem to have no qualms about seeing their most gifted black historians become members of a segregated educational enterprise where conditions not only discourage scholarly research and teaching, but stultify the human spirit as well. But the supreme irony is that now these same institutions are scouring the countryside in the effort to locate and offer professorships to those very black historians whom they trained and then sent into exile. And there's a story making the rounds these days that I'm insisting is apocryphal. I don't believe it, but it illustrates the point. It is reported that an Ivy League university has reestablished contact with a Negro teacher in Texas who received his PhD from that university in 1936. A letter to him written by a former fellow student at that university, that fellow student is now chairman of the department, goes something like this. Dear Joe, it has been ages since I've seen anything of you. I heard that you were at the last several meetings of the MLA, and I'm terribly sorry I did not see you, but you know how those awful meetings are. I've tried to keep up with you just the same. I remember that impressive thesis you wrote on the tragedy and sorrow in the poems of Phyllis Wheatley, and I am delighted that you were able to get an article published from it in the 1938 issue of the Journal of Higher Education, of the Journal of Higher Education Among Negroes. And by the way, Joe, we have decided to introduce a course in black literature. We were talking about it a few days ago, and with the students, and they thought it was a good idea too. They wondered where we could possibly get someone to teach it. And that gave us a real laugh, for we had you in mind all the time. And this opportunity comes at the right time, Joe, for old Professor Johnson, you remember him, is about to retire, and we want to offer you his chair. It would be great to have you back here at long last, and the black students would be delighted. Let me hear from you by return mail, Joe, and tell me that you will accept. Salary and fringe benefits are no problem at all. More detail later. All the best. Cordially yours, Tommy. One can almost hear the nervous laugh of the chairman as he tries to convince his former schoolmate that he should come and get him off the hook. One can also see the cold indifference of the chairman of this department to standards that would not be the case in considering, say, the introduction of a course on Anglo-Saxons or Chaucer or even Melville. His erstwhile buddy may well be the greatest living authority on black literature, but the chairman not only does not know that, but does not care. Somehow black literature is different, and if the students want it, and good old Joe will come and teach it, it won't do much harm, and it will help to maintain peace. I hope this story is truly apocryphal. It was told to me by a friend. But I'm afraid that if it is apocryphal, some stories like it are not. I'm afraid that there are a dozen similar true stories today in economics, sociology, literature, perhaps even history. It will take more than new books, new authorities, and new programs of study to achieve a really new and urgently needed approach to the study and teaching of the history of Negro Americans. What is needed by all who would teach and who would write in this field is a new way of looking at the history of the United States and a new way of teaching that history in the future. The history of the United States is not merely the history of a few generals, a few presidents, a few planners, and a few industrialists. It is the history of all the people, rich and poor, exalted and humble, black and white and yellow. And all of these people have been human beings, not subhumans or pariahs, but people worthy of the blessings of liberty and the rights of equality. And all of them have been involved deeply in the history of this country in every way, at every step, even if the role that they played was by assignment, if not by choice. And if there were slavery and injustice and unspeakable barbarities, the selling of babies from their mothers, the breeding of slaves, and the lynchings and the burnings at the stake, and discrimination and segregation, these things too are part of the history of the United States. If the patriots were more in love with slavery than freedom, if the founding fathers were more anxious to write slavery into the Constitution than they were to protect the rights of men, and if freedom was begrudgingly given and then effectively denied for another century, these things too are a part of the nation's history. It takes a person with a stout heart and great courage and uncompromising honesty to look the history of this country squarely in the face and tell it like it is. But nothing short of this will make it possible to have a reassessment of American history and a revision of American history that will in turn permit the teaching of the history of Negro Americans. And when that approach prevails, the history of the United States and the history of the black man can be written and can be taught by any person, white or black or otherwise. For there is nothing so irrelevant in telling the truth as the color of a man's skin. But telling the history of the black man in America is to insist for ourselves what we have insisted from others. The history of Negro Americans is so rich, so full of drama, indeed so full of great moments, that it needs neither embellishment nor exaggeration. Alexander Crummell of the 19th century and William Monroe Trotter of the 20th century do not need any assist from any of us to transform them into great fighters for human dignity. Paul Cuffey, Martin Delaney, Marcus Garvey can stand on their own record, and happily they were articulate enough to leave that record for all to see. But surely there were others, nameless, anonymous, despised, neglected, who were studiously ignored by earlier historians, but must not be neglected by those who would revise the history of the United States. The black strike breaker had a cause that transcended the so-called principle of lily-white trade unionism, and he must not be neglected. The black sharecropper had a part in transforming the economic life of the South, and he must not be neglected. The new techniques that the new social history has developed will be especially important in enlarging our vision and knowledge of the inarticulate and even the oppressed. These techniques will be a boon to the future study of the history of Negro Americans. And then the future history must not become the exclusive tool for those who want to use it for narrow political purposes. Those who seek to use it in such a manner cannot be prevented from doing so, and perhaps it is just as well. For from the beginning of time, history has been used in this way. But it must not become and it must not remain something else. Something much more important, something much more intellectually defensible, and something much more significant than the mere handmaiden of the political advocate or even the social reformer. For history must become and remain the searching and sobering force of an American life, the balance wheel in the American experience, the ground on which American historical scholarship can be tested. And from the vantage point of and perspective that it provides, it can be a most powerful factor in the continuing movement to revise American history. And the history of the United States is not one great success story, and it is not the recounting of the deeds of perfect or near-perfect men. Many of the military triumphs were purchased at a fantastically high price, at the price of segregated armies, discrimination in the treatment of black soldiers, insults by white civilians of the black men who were giving their lives to protect those white civilians. Many of its industrial triumphs were purchased at a remarkably high price, at the price of low and discriminatory pay to Negro workers, the inhuman discriminations by labor unions, and the exploitation of defenseless Negro labor that was used only in disputes between management and white labor unions. Many of its advances in civilization have been purchased at the price of creating a society that is racially exclusive, where housing, education, and even the means of survival have qualifications of race rather than of reason or of human capabilities. These triumphs, bought at so dear a price, are not the work of perfect or near-perfect men. They are the work of men bereft of the warmth of humanity and brotherhood. And if we are to have a history worthy of the principles of truth, we must revise our way of looking at our own history, that is, the history of the United States. We must be willing to criticize the past, including our own institutions and the men who made them. We must be willing to rewrite our textbooks in the light of the abundance of available materials that deny the exclusive role of one race of Americans. We must be willing to teach a history that is itself revisionist. The search for truth is never ending, but the way to begin is to be willing to seek it. Only in this way can we arrive at a point in our writings, in our teachings, and in our study where what we tell about our past is inspired more by justice than by pride, and where truth, though strange, is more important than fiction.